This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our next guest, Nora McInerney, the host of the podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. In her prolific writing career, she's often tapped for her essay pieces that highlight the emotional landscape and the humor in complex topics. She says that life has a million ways of kicking us in the chops. We lose love, jobs, our sense of self, but our guest has taken these losses and expanded around them. Her new book is called No Happy Endings. It's a memoir. And for those of you who've wanted to respond much differently than, I'm fine, when someone asks that question, how are you? This book might be just for you. Nora McInerney, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me. The mountain life sounds so nice because I guess it's going to snow like 2 feet here in Minnesota today. So.
Oh, you're going to get the storm that hit us last night. We got, well, not a foot, but you're getting 2 feet. It's unfair, isn't it?
I think so. I don't know. I just, at some point, I stopped reading it because I'm like, you know, whatever's going to happen is fine.
Okay. I know, which brings up the question, why do we even talk about the weather? Because it's going to happen.
I'm a Minnesotan. I'm legally obligated to talk to you about the weather. Well, I'm physically unable to not bring up the weather. It's bizarre.
That's true. That is true. And hearing your accent, it's a dead giveaway that you are from the Midwest and most likely Minnesota.
I am definitely from Minnesota. And you know what? I've never even tried to get rid of this accent because it is just,
I know.
It would be impossible. I would just have to stop talking.
Well, and why would you? Why would you want to get rid of that accent?
It's so charming.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So on Friday was when I got addicted to Terrible, Thanks for Asking. I hadn't heard of your podcast before. And then in reading through your book, of course, I learned about it. I even found myself going to the gym at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday morning so I could spin and listen to your podcast. And I never do that. I love your podcast.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you.
The way that you present how we all have tragedy, we all have adversity, we have horrible things happen, but at the same time, we have all this wonderful stuff in our lives to be happy about. And you, of course, preface all of your work by talking about your beloved husband who had brain cancer. So maybe just start with that story.
Yeah, well, in 2014, my husband Aaron died of brain cancer in November, and he had been receiving treatment for glioblastoma for 3 years. We got married 1 month exactly after his first brain surgery, and we had our son Ralph about a year after we got married, and we had a really normal, wonderful, happy marriage that also had some cancer in it. And when Aaron died, my dad had died 6 weeks before that. He had in 6 months sort of discovered that he was sick, and it killed him very quickly. And my dad died 5 days after I lost my second pregnancy with Aaron, which was, the much awaited sibling for our son, Ralph. And all of those things happened at once, which meant I didn't have a lot of time to feel any of them before the next thing happened. And then I didn't want to feel them. I didn't want to feel any of them. So I did my best impression of being a normal, functional person, and that wasn't good enough for me. I actually wanted to be better than a normal, functional person. I wanted to be so good at grief that nobody had ever seen somebody grieve this well, which meant I wasn't going to grieve. I was going to just stay busy, keep myself moving, and then I'd never have to feel it. And unfortunately, that is not a sound plan. You're going to feel it. It's going to catch up with you. And it caught up with me the moment I stopped. And the moment I stopped was when I completely accidentally fell in love with someone else.
Matthew. Oh, isn't Matthew wonderful?
Matthew.
And
he's so wonderful.
You talk about guilt and shame that you felt falling in love with someone else because you knew you were still in love with your now dead husband, and the how you reconcile the two is the beauty that really permeates all of your podcast episodes, no matter who you're talking to about whatever their story is. And it's what you bring to your book, and it's probably why you started chapter one titled How to Have a Total Breakdown.
Oh, completely, completely. I think that, I mean, the way that I'd always thought about life was that things were either good or bad, right? So, and an experience was either good or bad. I was either good or bad. I was either doing well or not doing well. And we don't have a very good culture around grief here in America, and we kind of think of it as a succinct and distinct part of life, something that you can get through and move on from and have closure with, and then you sort of leave it behind you. And when you think of it that way, it makes it very confusing if you are experiencing anything else while you're experiencing grief. But of course you're experiencing other things, because the world keeps spinning. You have to keep going to work and feeding your kids breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They eat all day. You have to keep paying your mortgage, which is so rude. You have to keep being a person. And grief is not a separate part of our lives. It's sort of woven in with all of our lives. And when you think of it as something that's supposed to be so separate, well, then you think, how can I possibly be grieving and also be experiencing love? And so one of these things has to be wrong, or I have to be wrong. And, you know, that isn't true. I think also what has happened since meeting Matthew is that I have this more expansive view of what love is, which means that I know now that it is bigger than I thought it was, and that loving one person does not necessarily mean less love for somebody else.
Nora, how does your book and your experience help other people to, I guess not really even other people, but our entire society, as you just said, our culture doesn't handle grief well. How could we handle it better, and what is your book doing to help us achieve that?
I think the best thing that we can do for each other is to really give each other space and to understand, and by that I mean give people time to actually feel things and to not be afraid of somebody else's discomfort. We live in a culture where, I mean, for whatever reason, like, I encourage all of your listeners, go ahead and look up your HR policies about bereavement leave, because what you're going to find is that most companies will give you 3 to 5 days if you lose a spouse or a parent or a child. Well, okay, so then you go back to the normal world and people think you are doing fine because you have to do all of these normal people things, but you're not normal anymore. Like, you're totally different. And we're afraid of that. We're afraid of other people's pain. We don't want to be the person who makes it worse for them. We don't want to say or do the wrong thing. And so sometimes we say or do nothing, and that is isolating in its own way. That is its own kind of loneliness. And what I hope that my book and my podcast does is basically give somebody something to point to say, it felt like this, or it feels like this. I want it to be a place where people can start. And sometimes it's easier to start with somebody else's experience than it is with your own.
And for those of us who find ourselves in that awkward position where we want to express condolence to someone because we understand that they have experienced a, you know, significant loss, but we don't know the proper way to express it. The words, and you say, you know, the ridiculous question of how are you, and they've just come back, as you also point out, from bereavement leave, and they are a changed person. How does somebody step into that space and deal with another person's grief in a compassionate way that is, you know, kind of gets through the awkwardness of it all?
I think it's okay to be a person and to say, I'm so sorry, and I don't know what to say, and I don't know what to do, but I just want you to know I'm thinking of you.
Well, that basically
and the other
covers
thing is
what I do.
People always want to know, like, you know, it's very common we say, like, let me know if you need anything. Well, you know, I don't know what I need, and I don't know what you can do. So what I tell everybody is what you can do for a grieving person is whatever you will do. And whatever you are capable of doing, just do it. If what you can do is drop off an amazing meal with a note that says, don't even bother returning this dish to me. Don't even bother sending me a thank you note. I'm just leaving this for you. Do that. If what you can do is organize like a fundraiser Do that. If what you can do is show up and shovel that 2 feet of snow so they don't have to do it, do that. But do it without expectation and without ego. And if you really want to know what to say, the best thing to do is to start with just listening and not trying to fill a silence with them and not trying to tell them that, you know, everything happens for a reason, but to let them guide the conversation. And also, especially if you're talking about loss, to let their person be a person, to say their person's name, not just in the context of death. Oh, I'm so sorry you lost so-and-so, but, you know, I'm thinking about Aaron. Remember when Aaron did this? I love when people offer me up a part of Aaron's memory that I don't have access to. That's such a gift to me. And to hear about him in a way that isn't just reflective of, you know, the sadness that we lost him, but of the fact that he was such a delight when he was alive.
Mm. I would imagine that this is pertinent to everyone, because those of us who go on Facebook ever, no matter if it's someone's dog that they've lost, someone's 97-year-old grandmother, or someone's spouse, everyone says the same thing. I'm so sorry for your loss. And I'm getting really tired of reading that. And I found myself
writing it
too. Yeah,
what if you said, she was such a good dog.
Yeah.
She was the cutest dog I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Your dad was the best. Remember when your dad took us to Dairy Queen and bought everyone an ice cream cone in fifth grade? That was the best.
Right.
Like, there's so many things to say.
And you have this wonderful friend, Tyler. He's the guy who says the right thing that's different than what everyone else says about loss. Well, about when you first got Aaron's diagnosis, brain cancer. He says, this is going to be the hardest thing you've ever been through. You know, while other people will say, oh, I know he's so strong, he's going to kick it. You know, he's going to be
right.
Okay. And it really illuminates. But it's a human frailty, that not knowing what to say or do. And that's why I love how you address it. And how, talk to us about Tyler.
Oh, I'm so lucky to have Tyler. He is such a pain in my butt, honestly. I think we all need friends like that, friends who won't just tell us what we want to hear, but friends who tell us what we need to hear. And he always does that for me, and sometimes it makes me really not like him, but I'm always so grateful for him. And he was the only person who told me after, you know, before we had Aaron's official diagnosis, he told me, this is going to be hard no matter what it is, and this is going to change your life. And I want you to be ready for that. I want you to be ready to hear the worst news. And I was like standing in the hospital taking his phone call, and I thought, no one has given me that kind of permission. And I walked into some sort of I don't even know if I was supposed to be in there. There's some sort of conference room that I gained access to in the hospital, and I screamed as loud as I could, and I flipped a chair over, and he was still there when I went back to the phone. Because of course he was, because he's the kind of friend who is going to be there in the really hard stuff, and that's the kind of friend we need. And Tyler was also the friend who told me after Aaron died, you need to go and get actual help. You need to go and find a therapist and talk to somebody about what is going on. And I thought, no, I don't. No, I don't. I don't need any help. Thank you, though. I'm fine. And he kept telling me every day, he's like, I love you, and you are not fine. There is no way that you are fine. And he was the only person who was telling me that. And I definitely, of course I wasn't fine. Of course I wasn't fine. But I felt like I needed to be for the sake of everybody else around me. And when you think about what can I do for a friend, let them be not fine.
Nora, do you think that relationship that you had with Tyler was what allowed him to see that you were not fine, where you had this armor and facade with everyone else that was saying, you know, because of what our society says about us and how we're supposed to return to work and how we're supposed to move on, that you were presenting as being fine, but with Tyler, he could see through it all and knew that you weren't? Or were you showing him something different than you were showing the rest of the world?
Oh, no. I was trying to show him what I showed everybody else, and he was like, no, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. And he would send me screenshots of photos I'd posted on Instagram and just say, you're not okay.
Well, that must
have
been...
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm. It was so annoying. It was so annoying. And I'm so glad now that he did that. But at the time, I was like, you are wrong. I'm fine. I just posted on the internet that I was fine. But yeah, everybody needs a friend who can kind of see through that. And if you can be the friend, if you can be like Tyler, go be like Tyler. That is a special kind of friend.
And that's why chapter 2 of your book is titled, You Need Therapy. Oh, yes, you do.
Correct.
Have you by chance
Correct.
Seen...
There's not a person on earth who can't benefit from just having a nice, neutral third party to go to with the difficult things in life and to have like an outside perspective. It's so nice. It's such a nice thing to do for yourself.
It is. Unless, of course, you're the therapist in the show I just recently watched, Ricky Gervais. Have you seen it, Afterlife?
Oh, yeah.
He loses his wife to cancer. You've seen it. The therapist
there.
Like, if you have never seen a therapist, please be notified that not all therapists are like that. He's the worst therapist ever.
Please do not take that as a representation of what therapy is like.
So great. Well, the book is called No Happy Endings. Nora McInerney is our guest. She's also the host of Terrible Thanks for Asking. I can't wait to listen to more episodes of your podcast. It's really, I was going to say delightful, but that's not what it is. It's heartfelt. It is delightful in many ways, and it's heartfelt, and it's illuminating, and we're so happy that you could join us on The Mountain Life, and good luck with those 2 feet of snow.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, get me out of here. This is a cry for help. Help me.
All right, Nora, great talking to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.